Blog Talk Radio.
We'd like to welcome our listening audience again to Welcome to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother African, we're going to be dealing with the subject matter of what's going on in the neck of your woods. That's the way they used to, speak and say slogan they used to use back there in the South back in the day. What's going on in the neck of your woods? And we believe this is important because, as I often say, that without information, people cannot think. And without organization, people cannot think clearly. So this show tonight, it really is dedicated to the audience, the listening audience. We'd like to encourage you to call in and share with the world in terms of what's going on in the neck of your wood. And you can do that by calling 323-679-0841. That's 323-679-0841. We welcome you to call in today to share with us what's going on in the neck of your woods. While we wait for your call in, we do have three particular guests who will be sharing their perspectives on what's going on in the neck of our woods. Right there we have a Jim Burns. He's an organizer for an organization called Jobs with Justice. We have Brother Hackey, who is an organizer for the African Awareness Association. And we have with us Brother Anthony Williams, who's an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. And we would like to welcome our guest to Welcome to Africa on the Move. Jim, can you just briefly say hello to our audience? Tell us a little something about you and your organization.
Great. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm coming from upstate New York and been in Tucson for about 2 years and got in touch with some folks who are with a national organization called Jobs with Justice. And the purpose of Jobs with Justice is to build coalitions for a number of working class issues. They usually labor struggles, trying to bring together unions, community organizations, faith-based organizations, and other partnerships and allies who have a common interest to solve various campaigns and movements and things like that. And it sort of takes on a specific context wherever a local J with J is, but nationally the scene's pretty the same, trying to fight off right-to-work laws and anti-immigration bills and all sorts of tactics like that.
Okay. Brother Hackey, can you just a little bit briefly describe what is the nature of the African Wellness Association? Just a brief little bit about you for our audience.
Yeah, briefly, African Awareness Organization is a political organization dedicated to the importance in terms of knowledge and knowing ourselves in a very chaotic world. We feel that knowledge is the key in terms of not only understanding ourselves, but also understanding the diaspora in terms of being able to empower ourselves. So we think education is very, very important, and we think that self-determination is the ultimate in terms of expressing who we are as a people. And we strive to do just that. Now, I've been organized for over 25 years in various organizations. So that's a little bit about me.
Okay, and we have with us Brother Anthony Williams, organizer for the All African People Revolutionary Party, GC. Talk us a little bit about the organization and who you are, Brother Anthony.
Certainly. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, which is a mass-based independent political party based in Africa, and our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. I started my work with the AAPRPGC as a student at Howard University, and I've been involved for approximately 30 years.
Okay, now we'd like to dwell into our subject area for tonight, which is what's going on in the neck of our woods. And we understand, Jim, with your organization, Jobs for Justice, I believe, that you are at a conference. You're at a conference out in Arizona that would be sponsored by Alliance for Global Justice. Can you talk to us about, in general, a little bit about the conference and then talk a little bit about some of the workshops and some of the issues that's going on out at the conference?
Sure. As you mentioned, this is the name of the conference is Tear Down the Walls, and it's been sponsored by the Alliance for Global Justice and all its partner organizations. And what they're trying to do is pull together a bunch of progressive and left-minded people and organizations who have a lot of common issues and fight on different terrains of struggle, but have a fairly common enemy. And so some of the workshops have been kind of across the board, whether it's sort of self-healing type of workshops to what's been happening in various indigenous communities across the country, to border militarization type stuff, the potential for a canal in Nicaragua. What's look at what's the peace process between the guerrillas and the Colombian state looking like? But really, sort of, I'd say the heart of the conference are the People's Popular Assemblies. People's Power Assemblies. There's six of them. One of them is economic justice. Another one is the drug war. A third one is the immigration and border militarization. The next one is on ecology and empire. The next one is on anti-repression and the prison industrial complex. And then the last one is on U.S. imperialism and anti-militarization. What those assemblies were about, they pulled together a number of different speakers who've been organizing and fighting for many years, and they shared their experience and their knowledge with us, and then we went forward trying to come up with proposals and solutions for coordinated national days of action. And just this morning I was in the anti-repression and prison industrial complex assembly, largely because I teach at a juvenile detention center here, and I would very much like to see an end to the school-to-prison pipeline and the massive incarceration of bodies of color and the destruction it causes to families. And that was just one of the most empowering and inspiring assemblies. There was numerous participants, a lot of women who are coming from the California hunger strike, the prisoner strike there, and sharing the inspirational things that those prisoners have done, and what we can attempt to do as a national campaign to bring awareness to, but ultimately put a stop to mass incarceration and destruction of families.
Excellent. Hey, Jim, for those who don't know that much about your organization, Child for Justice, can you talk to us a little bit more about the organization and how can they find you and get in touch with you, or how do they connect with your organization? Talk a little bit about the organization and work that y'all do on a yearly basis.
Sure. The National Jobs with Justice leads a number of different campaigns, whether they're wage theft or fighting against nasty immigration bills and laws in various areas. Whether they're Arizona, Georgia, or Alabama, or Mississippi, where the attempt to control the labor force, be they specifically persons of color, going into very highly repressive, racially profiled, and highly exploited working situations, Jobs with Justice tries to fight with other organizations who are leading those fights as well and do support work. They're findable on just if you put into an internet search engine, Jobs with Justice, we will come up. We're trying to build community power and fight alongside each other in these different terrains of struggle. And so what they've looked like over a number of years are helping union, specifically based union struggles, but as the deunionization has taken place over the last 30, 40 years here, that fight has had to change form. So they've locked themselves up with brothers and sisters in the Guest Worker Alliance, the National Domestic Workers, Care Workers Alliance, Caring Across Generations, and organizations like that, where new immigrants, be they undocumented or not, or refugee populations that are in very difficult, exploitable situations where they're made vulnerable, kept in the shadows, and kind of kept powerless, as well as they're picking up a campaign for the workfare that hits a lot of mothers specifically and disproportionately mothers of color. And so those are some of the coalitions and campaigns and movements that they fight in. And we here in Tucson are in a difficult position because it is a right-to-work state. And as we like to say around here, this is an empire for a laboratory for empire. This is kind of the experimental zone as what they can get away with as far as institutionalized racial profiling, the collaboration between other parts of the repressive apparatus and how the destruction of families and private prisons, private detention facilities, indefinite detention for them, for migrants, and trying to rally against some of that stuff while being in a state that's very difficult to speak out politically and very difficult to organize, both in the workplace and at other community organizations. But the struggle continues, and there's some bold, courageous leadership given by both individuals and their organizations, and just the day-to-day living of the communities is certainly bold and courageous, considering what they're facing.
I think we'd like to thank Jim for giving us an update on Trinidad and Wall Conference. He's going to be with us throughout the program. He's one of those who is sharing what's going on in the Nick of that Woods. Every next week we'll go to our brother Aki, who is the organizer for the African Awareness Association. And I understand that the African Awareness Association is taking and planning a Black History Freedom Ride tour to Cuba. It will take place from December 18th to January 3rd. And we'd like to talk a little bit about why it's important for people to rally around and support the brothers and sisters in Cuba. Why are we going to Cuba, Brother Aki? And why should we go, Brother Aki? Talk to our people. What's going on? What can we expect from the trip, and why are we going?
Well, I think just from a moral point of view, I think it's very, very important that we oppose the, you know, immoral blockading posed by the imperial government of the United States. I think that Cuba has the perfect paradigm in terms of what is best for humanity in terms of its recognition that the human being is more important than the bottom line. I think inherent in Cuba's philosophy in terms of treating human beings as human beings, I think the imperialist government sees implicit threats in terms of its own longevity as it attempts to manipulate, marginalize, exploit, and use its own people. So I think that there's a inherent threat, but the threat that's not political, but it's moral, and the fear that the U.S. government feels that people might begin to understand that your humanity is more important than any bottom line, more important than anybody's right to exploit you for money, your right to exist is more important than any system which says that according to your social status dictates your quality of life here on this earth. So I think that's implicit threat to this imperialist government in terms of this paradigm. So I think for that reason alone, it's very, very important that we support Cuba. But more important, and just as importantly, I think it's important that we support Cuba because we look at the history of the Cuban people in terms of their own struggles against oppression. And we look at Cuba's in terms of undying commitment to the rights of human beings, particularly African people, in terms of the heroic struggles, you know, actually providing Cuban troops to fight in places like, you know, Angola, you know, my wife, Namibia, places like South Africa. You know, and as truth be told, it wasn't for the courageous struggle of the Cubans. A lot of these struggles in the southern region of Africa wouldn't have been successful. So we owe Cuba a great deal of debt in terms of its commitment to humanity, in particular helping the most vulnerable among us in the world. And so for that alone, you know, we play homage to Cuba and we ask people to come out, you know, to make that journey, to travel, to say to the United States government that we have a human right to travel where we want to travel. And that, in fact, the Cubans are our brothers and sisters, and they understand that, we understand that, and we want the world to understand that. And most importantly, we want the U.S. government to understand that these are our brothers, and there will be no wedge driven between us and our brothers and sisters in Cuba.
Brother Aki, excellent said. I would have a question for you that an average person will probably ask. If you go to Cuba, what can you expect to see? What do they do? What does it look like? What did you experience when you went to Cuba? Because you have been there, and you have had a chance to deal with the people on the ground. What is Cuba to you? What can they expect? What's going on? What do they do? Talk to the people. What was your experience like when you went to Cuba?
Yeah, well, the thing I liked about this Cuban people, the spiritual development of the Cuban people, even though it's quote-unquote a communist nation, that the people's sense of who they are and a sense of pride, a sense of dignity was just overwhelming. You look at a society where people define themselves in terms of what kind of material wealth that they have. Then you look at a place like Cuba, which is in the process of developing, but despite, you know, the hardships in terms of development, the people carry themselves with just pride, such kind of self-respect. And it manifests itself in the way they treat other human beings. And so, you know, and I'm particularly impressed with the way in terms they treat their children. Often in the Western context, we see kids as a burden. In Cuba, kids are seen as a benefit, as a necessary, something that you must have in terms of the proliferation of your society. And so, therefore, I'm particularly impressed in terms of the spiritual development of Cuban people. I mean, they're smiling. I mean, their generosity. I mean, their willingness to share. I mean, which to most Americans, sharing in itself is probably problematic for a lot of us because we're conditioned to be individualistic. But it's the notion that we have Cuba says it has an obligation to take care of one another, and it manifests itself the way that people treat one another. I mean, if someone is hungry, you know, nobody have a problem in terms of bringing them in and feed them, and it's very interesting. And so this notion that we're all in this together is very, very strong among the Cuban people, and I suspect that would complicate the U.S. Desire to intervene militarily, because if they did intervene militarily in Cuba, then they're going to be there for a long, long period of time, because the spirit of the people's recognition in terms of their own history is just that strong. And so therefore, Cuba it offers a lot to the world, and I'm just impressed in terms of the overall, the economic, physical, and social system in terms of valuing a human being over all other. So I mean, so it's the kind of thing when you get there, you got to be impressed with the Cuban people in terms of systems and its government.
We have just heard Brother Hakeem from the African Awareness Association. He has invited the public to come with the African Awareness Association this December, December 18th, January 3rd, to come to Cuba. There's a Black History Tour, Freedom Ride Travel Challenge that the African Awareness is going to host, and they would like to invite everyone to come. And he stated that there are many reasons why we should be going, so we'll come back a little bit later on to continue that discussion. And we'll go to our next guest today, which we have with us, Brother Anthony Williams from the All African People Revolutionary Party, GC. We'd like to welcome you again, Brother Anthony. In terms of your organization, can you talk about, or what would you like to share with our audience, maybe what's going on in the neck of your woods? What are some of the things that y'all see as paramount for our people to be engaged in and need to be aware of? So the stage is all yours, Brother Anthony.
Thanks for having me on your program, Brother. I appreciate it. I want to say that if you look at what's happening at a homeland, Africa, as well as the diaspora, let's see, imperialism is intensifying its offensive everywhere through some of the repressive measures that Brother Jim described, as well as, you know, an intensification of the militarization of the African continent. And also the people's resistance to this offensive is intensifying as well. And we see that in the efforts of countries in Africa and in Central and South America, you know, to try to come together on common issues to form a united front against, you know, this imperialist offensive. And it's manifested in various ways in terms of the presence of foreign troops in various parts of African and African diaspora, and also the increasing repression of Africans wherever in the world they're located. And and we see that the solution, it, as Nkrumah and Secretary laid out generations ago, is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation unification of African to scientific socialism. But in order to achieve that, our people must be organized. And that's our primary focus today, is the organization of our people through the development of cadre.
Okay, so our audience, we'd like to alert them that they can now call in if they have any views on what has been presented so far, or if they would like to just call in and share what's going on in the neck of their woods. That is the subject area for tonight. We'd like to invite you to feel free to call in down at 323-679-0841, 323-679-0841. And when you call in, make sure you push the button 1, and we acknowledge your last 4 numbers on your phone. So right down, Brother Anthony, can you tell us a little bit about how do you feel about the recent policies as it relates to what's going on in Africa, i.e. the Middle East, on this whole issue of North Africa and the Middle East, like Iraq and Syria. How does that impact on the African community globally?
The impact is that if you follow the trends over the last 2 years, the various forces of imperialism have been intervening and toppling political movements or organizations or individuals that they don't like. And that has increased the level of instability in the countries where they've gone. Iraq and Libya are a couple of cases in point, as well as, Tunisia, Egypt. So what's going on in Syria has a great deal of relevance to Africans, throughout the world. Because if Africans, anywhere in the world decide to set up something that's in their own interest but that aren't liked by the imperialists, they risk, foreign intervention as well. Especially because we're disorganized and disunited, and we really are not sufficiently, strong enough to defend ourselves and our interests against any foreign intervention.
Excellent. We've been listening to Brother Anthony Williams, who's the organizer for the All African People Revolutionary Party, GC. And now we'll go to our next guest. We have Ms. Katie Fulton on the line, and we would like to just state that on Africa the Move, we have been an advocate for her particular case as it relates to her son. What we would like to do is give an update and ask Ms. Fulton to come in and share with us what's been happening recently about her case dealing with her son and this whole issue of trying to unjustly incarcerate this young brother down this particular pipeline that Brother Jim spoke to earlier. Sister Katie, welcome. Could you just talk a little bit about, here's the update and what's really going on right now with the son issue?
Yes, I can. I think one of the most recent experiences that we are having is communicating with the pretrial attorney. And we got a letter on this past Friday from the pretrial attorney, Andy Yates, and he indicated to my son in writing that he did not call in during the week of October 21, which is not correct at all, because we had a hearing in court on October 21. It was a Monday. And after that hearing, my son and I walked to the pretrial attorney's office, and he checked in at the front desk, spoke with the receptionist, and she said that she would record his visit and that the pretrial attorney, Andy Yates, was not in the office on that day. So she said that we'll record your visit here and we'll let him know that you visited us. And this would be your check-in for the week. He's required to check in weekly, and he's been doing everything that the court has asked him to do. Nevertheless, Andy Yates' letter to him this past weekend indicates that there's no record of him checking in. So my son took the message as an indication that they would like to maybe mislead the judge that he's disobeying his directives, and he's not. He's doing everything the court has asked him to do, including calling in, reporting in, checking in, and monitoring and reporting. So I said to my son, I said, you really do want to respond to this letter and let them know that I was with you when you went in and checked in. And he did. He called back, and the secretary said, well, yes, I remember you coming in on Monday, the 21st, but that was just considered an office visit. You still have to call in also. So I'm saying, okay, that this is one of the things which they are doing. They put him under such a short leash that they make him do this and make him do that and hope that he doesn't remember or can't do. So I said, well, if they want you to make an offer visit and they want you to call in and they want you to drop a UA and they want you to do that, I could try to do everything that they've asked you to do. Because once they start to mislead the court or mislead the judge won't have time to go back and see what you did and when you did it. So fortunately, he's been keeping a log. So these are some of the things that they do. Not only are they trying to take him into court and prosecute him under the fact that they're using computer images to file felony charges against him, they are intending to ruin his life, because even if he has a child in the future, he's not a father now, but if he elects to get married and father a child, he will not be able to visit his own children with these kind of charges hanging over his head.
They got laws in existence there that would deny a biological father the right to,
visit his own children. This is undermining, and this is critical. These are the kind of felony charges that my son is facing based on the computer images. They're using the computer images that they said they found on the computer to bring charges against him, and these charges are serious, and these charges are life-altering. So I'm saying if he fathers a child in the future, he would not be able to visit his own child, because they intend to keep him away from all children, knowing that this is strictly circumstantial evidence that they have. And they're trying to make sure that they prosecute him in an all-white county, Douglas County, which is likely to have no black from the jury.
What state is we in? Let people know where you're in. What state is this we're talking about?
We're in the state of Colorado, and we have never lived in Douglas County. And we're asking the court, how is it that they have elected to cross county lines and use Douglas County to bring these charges against my son? And he says, well, we were just surfing the Internet and looking for something to do, because that's what we do. We surf the Internet and look for something to do, and if we can find someone who has information coming in that they should have coming in, then we'll come after them. So they said information was coming in on his computer through the Internet, so we're going to prosecute him based on that information. I said, these are computer images which he could not control. He had no control over what was coming into his computer. He did not video. He did not sell it. He did not recruit it. And you're still going to prosecute my son on felony charges based on these computer images? And they say, well, yes, the law allows us to do that, so that's what we have to do. So now we are fighting for his life. We're fighting for his freedom. We want the public to understand that the computers that you have in your home are resourceful and useful, but they can really be used against you, as they're being used against my son now. And I really hope and pray that somewhere in the system, somewhere along the way, we'll understand that these laws are not only unconstitutional, but they are definitely individuals that can be targeted by using their computers against them.
Katie, before we lose that audience, because we're going to go over, and for folks who would like to hear the whole entirety of this program, they can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Africa-on-the-move and hear the entirety of the program. But before we lose some of our audience, I'd like for you briefly, could you just share with them how can they support you? How can they reach out to you?
We ask that you contact us by going to SaveOurSon2013@gmail.com, or you can contact us by calling 720-499-5146. Again, 720-499-5146, or write to us at Post Office Box 58, Inglewood, Colorado, 80151, Save Our Sons Defense Fund, INC, a tax-exempt organization in which we are trying to support this young man and trying to support others who may find themselves in need of legal assistance.
Is there a phone number you can give people to reach out to you?
Yes, 720-499-5146. There's another number that interrupted for a short time and hopefully is back on the line now, 720-221-8500. Either of those numbers, we'll be glad to respond. We'll be glad to share our story with you, because we are in need of assistance. We are trying very hard to aware the public that this young man is fighting for his life, his freedom, and his independence and his reputation, because this is really and truly a charge which is not only bogus, but a charge that is unconstitutional and one in which he needs assistance with. So I appreciate you giving me the time to let you know that the most recent experience has been to make sure that he's doing everything that the court has asked him to do, and he's a law-abiding citizen. He never had a problem with law enforcement. He's always done what he's been asked to do. But this charge, these charges that he's looking at now, are called sexual exploitation of children. And this is almost impossible to believe because he's not physically had sex with anyone. He's not physically used a computer to exploit any child, and they know that. But they said that because the computer images were on his computer showing children were being things of children were coming in from overseas somewhere, so this is some kind of file sharing, and they can use these images to bring charges against him, and that's what they've done.
Okay, I'm going to take your case a little bit, and I'm going to address this to Jim and his organization. They have an organization called Jobs for Justice, and one of the things he alluded to earlier, they were fighting this concept of trying to stop this pipeline to prison thing. Reoccurring in particular among people of color. Jim, based upon what you just heard, how would you think your organization may be in position to address someone in that kind of situation?
We haven't, as a local J with J, taken that up as a specific fight. But part of our work is to get people decent-paying jobs with dignity, respect, safe working conditions, union representation, and things like that. I think that factors into being able to organize against this pipeline and create alternative pipelines for our youth. So there's a number of different people here in Tucson who are connected to larger juvenile justice organizations. So what we do here on the task force is try and fight on a number of different terrains, and one of them is getting the police to go through a different procedure, alternatives to detention, try and get parents and guardians there first before the kids are brought to the detention center, and really make the court aware and the police department aware of the disproportionate minority contact and how to work through reducing those numbers. Additionally, one of the more difficult things to do is get these children access to education. And so we have the GED and high school credit recovery at the detention center. That's what I work on is the educational front. But then trying to get them jobs and skills and trades and things like that. So there's a number of different organizations and actual companies and local restaurants and stuff like that who are trying to cultivate working relationships with these kids and these people to try and get them jobs. Because, you know, we can say what we want about trying to get them, you know, get their heads on straight and walk away from gangs and activity that will get them back into the pipeline. But if we can't get them another means of subsistence other than doing things that are going to get them locked up, then we're just going to be fighting the uphill battle and the cycle will repeat. So some of the stuff we want to work on are working with an organization called Green for All, the National Coalition. And they're trying to identify industries that can get like solar technology training and identifying the kids who would benefit from that most and the communities who would benefit from that most and getting gardening programs and things like that, developing culture with agriculture. So that's some of the stuff that we're going to try and sink our teeth into in the coming months and years.
Okay, this question is to Brother Hackey and Anthony. Hackey first, Anthony second. Can y'all maybe talk a little bit about this whole question, Brother Hackey, from looking at your experiences of general, just looking at our communities and dealing with the youth, this whole question of the criminal justice system and its relationship to the youth. How can we create a scenario where, like this recent example you just heard with Ms. Fulton's son, how can we create a reality where our youth wouldn't seem to be preyed upon by a system that claimed to protect it? What is just your response to what you have heard from Ms. Fulton today?
Well, you know what? I think there's a certain amount of realism we have to inject into this discourse in terms of what's really going on. One of the things recently, they just released a report which state that in the next 10 years, they're projecting 1 in 3 African-American youth will be in the criminal justice system, not involved in the criminal justice system in terms of, you know, probation and that kind of thing, but actually in incarcerated, 1 in 3. Now, this is in stark contrast to just a year ago. They were predicting the next 10 years, 1 in 7 young African-American men would be involved in the criminal justice system. So clearly the young black people are being targeted. And my position is that what they're doing is tantamount to genocide. And I think that's the kind of discussion we have to bring to the table. I think we have to start thinking more internationally as opposed to nationally or even locally. I think first and foremost, as a strategy, I think it's important that we begin to make sure the world understand that what they think exists in America and what America really is are two different things. I think in the context of getting the world to understand, like we historically did, getting the world to understand America is not what America professes to be, that we have some give us some maneuverability in terms of being able to actively fight and to empower more and more attorneys to actually take cases like that where you got governmental abuse that's commonplace in the society, particularly as it impacts on young African-American males. So I think it's the solution is a hard-fought one. I don't think there are no easy solutions because we understand this is systemic. So, you know, so I think first and foremost we do the international piece. We have to do the international piece. And if that means embarrassing the United States government, then so be it, and that's what we have to do. I think secondly we have to educate people in terms of these very real atrocities, and like the sister's doing now in terms of telling people in terms of this atrocity, and to work hard to increase the number of people who are suffering to this message in terms of, you know, precisely what's going on. So I think I'm sorry. Can you hear?
Yeah, we can hear. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So in any event, I think just in terms of we're really going to fight this struggle. I mean, we have to start thinking not nationally, but we have to start thinking globally in terms of highlighting the kind of atrocities that take place in this country. Because if we don't, then when these atrocities are becoming more and more intense, then we essentially we'll be standing alone. So I think it's important we start a process now in terms of highlighting these atrocities on a global level.
Brother Anthony, your response to this situation? How you think?
I concur with what Brother Haki stated. And as a matter of fact, there have been attempts in the past to try to, try to make the world aware of what's going on with Africans inside the U.S. And that effort has to intensify. And this is a battle that has to be waged on several different fronts. One, we must do more to educate our youth. About our true role in history. Identity, what we, what our existence was like prior to us being uprooted, and also the true history of our experiences here. And I think that'll be a start toward changing the way we tend to treat each other. So I think education is very critical, and also the organization of our people. We must get organized. As Brother Haki stated, our oppression is systemic, and so it has to be dealt with in a systemic fashion. So we have to get organized, and everybody needs to join an organization that's working for our people's liberation. That's absolutely critical at this stage. Yeah.
Okay, we're into our closing statements. I will start with Ms. Fulton. Give you a minute, so Ms. Fulton, to make a closing statement in terms of supporting your son. And
I do appreciate the platform in which you have allowed us to share what's going on in our neck of the woods. So, and I do appreciate the platform in which you have allowed me to share the nightmare that my son and I are experiencing right now in the state of Colorado. We've reached out. We have asked for help. We have shared our experience as best we can. We continue to struggle. We have not given up hope. But we appreciate the platform and also the audience that you have on today, the guest speakers are aware that these things are possible in the United States of America in 2013. So I hope and pray that those who are hearing my voice today will care enough to call, to contact us, so we can share our experience, so you will become fully aware of what this has been like. Call us at 720-499-5146, 720-221-8500, or write to us, Save Our Sons, Defense Fund, INC, Post Office Box 58, Englewood, Colorado, 80151. Your help would be greatly appreciated. Thank you again for your support.
Jim, a one-minute closing statement on your organization and theme tonight. How can they get in contact with you?
Okay, great, thanks. I'd like to echo that sentiment of appreciating the platform and the opportunity to share our information, knowledge, and wisdom with each other. As far as a summary statement, I would agree. I think we all need some organization to be involved with. This is going to be a collective struggle that works through various levels of unity and in order to fight both the multiple systems of oppression, be they colonial, neo-colonial, and imperialist and exploitation on those fronts, and that you can get a hold of the National Jobs of Justice easily through an internet search. But myself, if you'd like to get a hold of me, we can share some stuff about what's happening here in the border region, my email is the letter J, the letter P, and then my last name, BYRNE, the number 2, at gmail.com. And I would really appreciate any resources, potential speakers, any information that I can pass on to my kids, their parents, and the community organizations that are fighting to stop this school-to-prison pipeline. Thank you very much.
Brother Hackey, one minute or so on why they should support Cuba and come on the funeral ride, December 18 to the January 3rd.
I think we should support Cuba because it's in our best interest. We should not be so naive as to believe that, in fact, that we're not in trouble. Now, we're talking about a global economic system. And essentially what they're talking about is that those with wealth and power make the rules. Those wealth and power only measuring stick in terms of points of life has to do with terms of economic earnings. If you can produce wealth, if you have no access to wealth, then as far as those in power control, then your existence is esoteric, that you don't have a right to exist. We have to understand this fully, that this is the reality that we live in. Cuba offers a different paradigm for the world in terms of the worth of human beings. So therefore, come out, support Cuba, support liberation, and support the uplift of all humanity throughout the world.
And just by joining the African Women's Association on the funeral ride, you can call them at 804-549-7492, or you can email them at African_Awareness_Association@yahoo.com. Time is for essence, so people must respond quickly. And if you can do so, I know they will greatly appreciate it. And closing out statement from the African Awareness, not from the African Awareness Association, but from the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Brother Anthony, closing statement, and how can the people find out more about the APRPGC?
First of all, thank you for allowing me to participate on this program today. I've learned a lot from all of the participants involved in the program. We have to intensify our efforts to achieve Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. To learn more about the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, you can contact us at 202-719-0529 or email us at info@a-aprp-gc.org. Our website is www.a-aprp-gc.org.
Okay, we'd like to thank our listening audience and our guests today for sharing what's going on in Nick of That Woods. I'd like to remind all of our followers and listeners that You can hear Africa on the Move every other Sunday at 6 p.m., same time, same station. Again, we thank you for allowing us.